minute past the hour, minute past six here in the Eastern Time Zone. On the 14th day of June 2012. Good evening. Good afternoon. Good morning, wherever you may be. Good day, Earth. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. A little slice of what we call conversation radio, and welcome to it. The Horn is available to you, just by way of a reminder, depending on how you're listening, on a variety of platforms. We have, for instance, the home website itself, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, where there are a couple of different ways to listen. We have WhiteRoseSociety.org, where you can listen to the stream. Or, as well, the home of the Horn Podcasts. Podcasting and live streaming available at iTunes Radio and iTunes as well. And streaming available at Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, and a variety of other platforms that I have not yet had time to research. We're out there. We're everywhere. And it is free and easy for you to listen or for you to recommend to others that they listen. This, of course, is what we call Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I got a feeling. It's going to be a big one. Or a long one. Or a big long one. Leave it alone, Bob. We do. We've still got spillover and leftover material from the night before. See, that's what happens when, especially in a political season, when you are simply awash in morons, right-wing weirdos, Republicans. But you know, one of the other things, we also pay attention here to are the ordinary rights of ordinary people. And with that, I wanted to mention a new report that is out lately. Bring it to your attention, and perhaps suggest that you might want to take action accordingly with it, because it's a means of making some of your consumer choices. And you know, I hate that word consumer, right? But making some of your consumer choices a little bit more ethical. What am I talking about? I can answer that. I have it right here. The name of the organization issuing the report is ROC. And ROC stands for Restaurant Opportunities Centers United. They are a group that is concerned about and dedicated to the rights of some of the most oppressed, some of the most put upon, some of the most hard-worked people in this country, namely restaurant workers. It's a brutal business, and it's brutally hard work. You may recall a couple of weeks ago, a couple of days ago, our buddy Ron in Raleigh mentioned such practices as wage theft, working off the clock, that sort of thing. Well, it turns out that that is notoriously prevalent inside the restaurant industry. May I suggest that there's one place you don't want to get anywhere near? On this list of so-called ethical restaurants, among those scoring the very lowest is an outfit called Darden Restaurant Group. They are, of course, a conglomerate that runs a number of different national chains. They own Red Lobster, Capital Grille, Longhorn Steakhouse, and Olive Garden, among other things. They are, according to people who have worked there, notorious for wage theft, for discrimination, having people do what is called side work, such as rolling silverware, filling salt and pepper shakers, and other custodial duties, as they're described, without clocking in and being paid to do it. It is theft. It is a violation of the wage and hour laws of almost every state. Darden also asks people who work for tips, and therefore a much, much lower hourly rate, to go ahead and do work that people who are not tipped and have a higher hourly rate should be doing. It is a fact that 7 of the 10 lowest paid jobs in the United States are restaurant jobs. It's hot, it's sweaty, it's heavy weight lifting, cumbersome, dangerous, and restaurant customers are not the friendliest people in the world. And yet at the same time, someone waiting tables always has to meet you with a smile as if it is the absolute signal joy of their day that you and your little tribe of munchkins have walked into the establishment to dine with them. Oh, rapture, oh, joy, they smile. While at the same time, they are making, on average, nationally, kind of sit down for this one, would you? The national average for a restaurant worker is $2.13 per hour. $2.13 per hour, with the rest of it supposedly being made up in tips. Which, remember, one of his first acts upon taking office was Ronald Reagan's decision to tax tips. And tipping as a whole is an entirely separate category, because with someone making $2.13 an hour and tips being shared out among not just the wait staff but the other tipped wage staff, you've got to have a lot of traffic in a restaurant in order to make up that disparity. An awful lot. Who else didn't score well on the diner's guide? Starbucks, McDonald's, Arby's, Hooters, Denny's, and that's just the beginning of the rather vast list of other employers who don't offer their tipped employees anything more than that $2.13 an hour, who don't beat the regional minimum wage, who don't offer paid sick days, who don't offer any form of health insurance. Good God. I don't know about you, but it will be a cold day in hell before, like I can afford to, before I go sashaying into a Longhorn Steakhouse or Red Lobster. I've never even heard of Capital Grille. And Olive Garden, with us, your family. If by family you mean we work people like we don't have to pay them anything. The Rock United Restaurant Ethical Diner's Guide can be found at rockunited.org. I found it interesting, one of and these two things kind of dovetail. It turns out one of the programs that I actually bother to watch on the television, Anthony Bourdain's series on the Travel Channel, No Reservations, is going away after 8 years. Hard to believe it's been 8 years. It's going away, but it's not leaving the television. It's leaving the Travel Channel. Get this. CNN has hired Anthony Bourdain. We shall see. We shall see. I feel kind of bad for him because that means sooner or later he's going to have to spend some time on set with Wolf Blitzer, and that's just icky. Ugh. No, but they reached out and hired Bourdain because they were looking to get away from having their programming be all news, which I found a little bit interesting insofar as CNN is supposed to be all news. But with the advent of things like Radio Rwanda in the U.S., Fox, then having programming about, or MSNBC's persistence in spending entire weekends airing alleged documentaries about life in prison. Well, I guess CNN kind of needed to fill some space with it. And they can't just run Nancy Grace forever over on Headline News. But the program, his documentary, and it really is, it's far more about people than food, will be showing up on CNN, and I'll certainly give it a try. But one of the things that I picked up over the course of watching that program as long as I did is the utter necessity of tipping in the United States. And, of course, that's borne out in this Rock report, rockunited.org. They write in the report itself, with a federal minimum wage of $2.13 for tipped workers and $7.25 for non-tipped workers, the median wage for restaurant workers is $8.90, just below the poverty line for a family of three. This means that more than half of all restaurant workers nationwide earn less than the federal poverty line. Yeah, yeah, Marty, you keep plugging Samantha Brown. If somebody has to, I guess you're the guy to do it. Of the more than 4,300 restaurant workers surveyed in the Rock report do not have paid sick leave. Women, immigrants, and people of color have lower-paying positions in the restaurant industry. There's a $4 wage gap between white and persons of color. It goes on and on and on. The first thing that the report notes is that the federal minimum wage for tipped workers needs to rise above $2.13. Donna Edwards, a Democrat from Maryland, has worked with Rock to introduce the Wages Act, that increases the tipped minimum wage to 70% of the regular minimum wage, i.e. about $5. Hoo-wee! Don't spend it all in one place! But it is important to note, as others have said, if you can't tip, you shouldn't be eating out. There is also pending legislation called the Healthy Families Act. That's a federal bill that would provide 7 paid sick days to every worker in America. Sounds like communism to me. Or probably something that, I don't know, it's French. Speaking of which, it is habitual that if I go out, I know because I had friends who ran restaurants, that, you know, you do tip. And the minimum tip line is about 15%, and 20% should be standard. But lo and behold, guess what you don't have to do when you go to a civilized nation? Tip. This was made clear to me in a couple of different places on my recent journeys. Oh, no, Bob, you don't have to tip. He is earning a living wage. Tipping is not done here. What a foreign concept that someone working in the food service industry would actually make enough to be able to go home and feed their families. Shocking, huh? So, some restaurants, very few, did do very, very well but the ones who did are noteworthy. Avalon of Detroit, Michigan. Baked goods and quick serve items did well. Washington, D.C.'s Ben's Chili Bowl, a cultural landmark, did well. They're very hard to find on this list. Busboys and Poets, a chain throughout D.C., also did well. It's a long list. The Chaya restaurant group in California did quite well. That's Asian fusion cooking. If you're looking for a burger, two of your better opportunities are In-N-Out Burger, and which we ain't got, and Five Guys, which we do. Colors of Detroit, Michigan, and New York City International Fine Dining scored extremely well. Comida of New York City scored well. Cowgirl of New York City scored well. Kraft, American Traditional Fine Dining, nationally did well. Crema of New York City, Mexican, did well. And there's a lot of scrolling in between these names. Elephant Bar, a national chain, international and casual dining. I've seen one in Washington, D.C., I think. El Fuego, headquartered out of Philadelphia, quick serve Mexican. Good Girl Dinette, The Gorballs, Gorilla Cafe, Homegirl Cafe, Houlihan's. These people deserve to have their names mentioned simply because they are trying to do well. As previously mentioned, In-N-Out Burger, Inspire Barbecue, Jack Rose, Jose Andres, under the names Jaleo, America Eats, Tavern, Zaytonia, and Oyamel, Mexican, casual. La Palapa, Las Chicas Locas, La Petit Zinc, local, out of L.A. I mean, there's a Morton's, the steakhouse nationally. Nectar out of New York and Niao's Creole Cafe out of New Orleans. Again, a reminder, stay out of Olive Garden. One If By Land out of New York City did well. Outback Steakhouse? Sorry. P.F. Chang's? Nope. Panera Bread, sorry. Papa John's, no way. Pizza Hut, the Italian casual outfit, Pizza Aiolo, probably mispronouncing that. Headquartered out of Oakland. Yes, good. Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, no. Red Lobster, previously mentioned. Stinker. Red Robin Gourmet Burgers? Nope. Romano's Macaroni Grill? Sorry. Ruby Tuesday? Mm-mm. The Russell Street Deli out of Detroit, Michigan? Yes. Sbarro? The little pizza? Nope. Oh, and not surprisingly, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Frequent former advertiser for the bloviating junkie, the oxymoron, Rush Limbaugh. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, home of right-wing dining. Nope, they stink. Don't want your money in there. You can go to Slow's Barbecue in Detroit. They do well. Not so much at Sonic. Of course, I try to stay out of Sonic here because when I noticed driving by one day, well, actually, I'd placed an order and canceled the order at the window when I saw their Friends of Coal sticker. Steak and Shake? No. Starbucks? No. Subway? Sorry, Jared. No. Sugar Bliss in Chicago is recommendable. They're a bakery. No TGI Fridays. No Taco Bell. Texas Land and Cattle Steakhouse. No. Texas Roadhouse. No. Texas Steakhouse. No. Yes and yes to Union Square Hospitality Group and Todai. No to Tony Roma's. No to Uno Chicago Grill. No to Waffle House. No to Wawa, no to Wendy's, no to Whataburger, no to White Castle, no to Yard House, no to Zaxby's, yes to Wolfgang Puck's Grill, yes to Yola, yes to Zingerman's Deli, and Zingerman's Roadhouse. And that takes us to the Z. And done. So, and that was by no means the complete list. But we do need to understand that consumer choices, purchasing choices, are in fact ethics choices. Didn't see Togo on there, Marty. Sandra, so true. I bet Herman Cain had something to do with the slave wages as head scum lobbyist for the Restaurant Association. Oh, sure, you can bet that they'll fight that idea of a $5 an hour minimum wage for tipped workers tooth and toenail because, well, you know, a good restaurant server is a starving restaurant server. Because if they're not starving, they might not just sit still for having wages stolen from them, right? Yeah, exactly. But it is thorn in the side Thursday. And we will be rather busy, I suspect. In the midst of everything else that we talked about last night, we missed a couple. I guess one of these days, when I get old enough, I will take great pleasure in getting up incredibly early every morning and getting my day started by watching C-SPAN's Washington Journal. Haven't gotten there yet, but I may. Because I guess it can be beneficial. Grover Norquist was on Washington Journal day before yesterday? And he got punked. He got punked by someone calling in, because they've got the Republican line and the Democrat line, right? Somebody called on the Republican line and dinged old Grover. Let's give it a listen.
Hear from a caller right here in Washington, D.C., Ralph, a Republican. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, Ralph.
I got to thank you for keeping my taxes low. I used to work for a living as an engineer, and now I am an investor. And I'm making seven figures, and I'm paying virtually nothing in taxes. And I just find it hysterical because I don't pay any Social Security. I don't pay any Medicaid or Medicare because I exceed that limit. And I get capital gains, so I'm only paying 15%. But, you know, these people who are middle class and blue collar and they're voting for this tax thing, I think it's great. I think they're stupid. I call them soundbite monkeys because they'll believe anything. But, you know, I'm getting rich, and the middle class are getting screwed and the lower class are getting screwed. But, hey, you know, keep it up, man, because I'm going to be filthy rich, and those suckers are going to be living in slums by the time we get done.
Those whats are going to be living in slums? Aren't you grateful for internet radio where we don't have to go beep? Because, you know, that's just truth-telling. Grover sits, I know we're talking dancing about architecture here, but in the video Grover sits there smiling because dude is saying everything he wants to have said. Because that's America. I'm getting rich, and the middle class is getting screwed, and the lower class is getting... And that's when Grover starts going, wait a minute. And then Grover fires back.
Right. Ralph, I think you're a very nice left-wing twit, and you're calling on the Republican line and taking up other people's time, and that's really a little dishonest. If you want to come in and make the case for left-wing politics, we...
Ah, left-wing politics. I see. Is that what it is now? Is that how we have redefined redefined our national debate, that being able to stay in the middle class is now left-wing politics? Because I'm glad to have that definition. I'm glad to work with that. Oh, Jesus, where's the Acme Corporation when you need them, Grover? I mean, can't we get you some rocket roller skates or Instant Hole or... Don't you want to launch yourself from a catapult or anything? You want to kind of take Grover to Toontown, don't you? You know, where anvils just fall out of the sky. Yeah, he's upset because Ralph claimed to be a Republican and punked his ass. Well, that was dishonest. No, no, Grover, what's dishonest is trying to rip off the entire American economy for the sake of a teeny tiny handful of wealth holders. That's dishonest. But he's got his talking points at the ready.
We've been discussing that. We've had some nice left-wing guys call and ask grown-up questions and not lie about who they are and take some Republican who wanted to call in and ask a question off the line because you fibbed and claimed to be arguing from a, you know, Reagan Republican perspective and made up the story about who you are. You know, how you got rich and didn't, you know, pay taxes, which would be fascinating. You could make a lot of money selling that secret. In point of fact, as people know, the top 1% of income.
But you see, that's the way a Republican operates. They lie. The guy didn't say he doesn't pay taxes. He says he doesn't pay anything in Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid on the vast majority of his earnings, because that's true. And Grover has to blow past that because Grover has no answer for it. Because the simple fact of the matter is, we would not have a Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security problem in this country if the 1% paid the same as the 99% for those programs. The guy also said he went from working to being an investor, so he only takes 15% because it's all capital gains, which is one of the reasons that people like Willard Romney only paid how much? In those very, very limited releases of tax returns, how little did Willard Romney pay? Yeah. What, 14%? And then he tithed or something, whatever you call it, to another 10 to Salt Lake City? There's a little bit more, though.
Income earners in this country pay 40% of the federal income tax. The top 50% pay 99% of the personal income taxes. So we have a steeply progressive tax.
No, we don't. You caught the front end of that. 1% pays 40% of the income taxes. But they are not paying the same percentage of their available wealth as we are. And that is definitionally not progressive, Grover. Go to hell, you sorry, sad, free, anti-American freak. That's regressive. That's regressive. And again, a larger question for C-SPAN. What is this man doing on television? Why is this man not booed, jeered at, hissed at, and spat upon everywhere he goes? Any human being, because remember, we're talking, you know, right wingers and pig lickings, they love them some America, right? The minute we start bombing the snot out of some country with brown people living in it, they're the first ones with their little yellow ribbon magnets on their Escalades next to their global warmer vanity tag. Thanks, Vince. They love them some America, the pig lickins. And yet here's a man whose most famous pronouncement ever is that he wants to weaken the federal government to the point that you can drown it in a bathtub. You know, like some sort of mafiosi hit. Like something a psychopathic murderer would do in an Alfred Hitchcock film. And that, in the twisted, backwards, upside-down, sick world of the Republican Party, is deemed being a good American instead of outright un-American. Yeah, okay, Marty. Actually, I'd rather drop Grover into the dip and see if he dissolves like Judge Doom did. Isaac noting, Morton's from the restaurant list? I had this lady tell me I have to take her to Morton's. I told her, kiss my ass. No way I'm paying $165 for a dinner for two. And now, especially realizing that the people who are serving you that dinner for two ain't getting paid worth a damn. It's all going to the Morton's 1%. Eye-opening, isn't it? Really, Sandra? Is he? Not to mention queer as fuck. Now, is Grover a closet case? That might explain some of it. The closet is a hateful, hateful place that makes people very uncomfortable and... Yeah. I did not know that. Randy noting, all of the exiled liberals are on Russia Today TV on the internet. No irony there, is there? Lots of irony there. Yeah, who all? I know Hartman's over there. Does some RT work. Oh, dang, if only I had a face made for television. Nah, not really. I like this format. I like this medium. I like radio a lot more than I do television. Because it's a lot easier to have interaction. The camera makes you want to be still. But it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I certainly thought that applied as a thorn. So too this. Coming out of Michigan, and I got a number of emails from a lot of you today about this story. It is apparently now illegal in Michigan, or at least in the Michigan legislature, to say vagina? Yeah. Debate had yesterday on one of the most hateful anti-choice bills in the country, effectively a complete ban on women's reproductive health choices in the state. And bless her heart, a member of the state House of Representatives by the name of Lisa Brown, a Democrat, got right to the heart of the matter. She, I don't know, Albert. Do we add Lisa Brown to the list? Hi, Lise. Hey, Vern. Yeah. Hi, Van. Because the heart of the matter is that the soul of the anti-abortion debate is always, it always has to come from a position of compulsory religious practice. This was the scene in the Michigan legislature.
Representative Byram offers one amendment identified as Amendment 2I.
The question before the House is on the adoption of Amendment 2I. The clerk will open the board. Members may vote at their desks. The amendment is not adopted. Are there further amendments? Are there... Representative, you are out of order.
This legislation, it was three banker boxes. There are more than 10,000 Kurds. This legislation does a lot of things, Mr. Speaker. It regulates business, requiring exorbitant insurance policies to be purchased which will result in clinics closing doors, causing people to lose their jobs, and denying women their constitutional rights. Yesterday, we heard from the representative from Holland speak about religious freedom. I'm Jewish. I keep kosher in my home. I have two sets of dishes, one for meat and one for dairy, and another two sets of dishes on top of that for Passover. Judaism believes that therapeutic abortions, namely abortions performed in order to preserve the life of the mother, are not only permissible, but mandatory. The stage of pregnancy does not matter. Wherever there is a question of the life of the mother or that of the unborn child, Jewish law rules in favor of preserving the life of the mother. The status of the fetus as human life does not equal that of the mother. I have not asked you to adopt and adhere to my religious beliefs. Why are you asking me to adopt yours? And finally, Mr. Speaker, I'm flattered that you're all so interested in my vagina, but no means no.
Members, I do ask that you respect the decorum of the House.
I was so disappointed. I received a...
She violated decorum of the House by saying vagina. Jesus, they've turned into a Monty Python skit in the Michigan State House. All I said was that that was a lovely piece of halibut, and it was good enough to give to Jehovah. Oh, he said it again! Stone him! The lady said vagina and violated the comity of the House. Penis, 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 penis. Can we say that?
Oh, all right.
Letter prior to us bringing House Bill 5711 up. And it's disappointing not just to me, but to the citizens of this great state. I had a letter from the Right to Life letting us know that there were technical changes in 5711. You know, it's so nice to know that Right to Life is helping write the legislation. As a medical professional, we should be talking to our obstetricians. We should be getting input from them, Mr. Speaker, not from outside entities like Right to Life. I think that's wrong.
Take a walk with me, if you will, to the OBGYN, where we disrobe and we lay on the bed and put our legs up in stirrups as the doctor, a certified doctor, decides to make sure make sure that we are not only healthy, but the baby is healthy. These bills do not take into accountability the health of a woman. These bills, after 20 weeks, basically says that my health is not important. And I do not believe that this legislative body should endorse such. Thank you, Mrs. Speaker.
Thank you.
At least she didn't say vagina. Now, I played that clip for you because, honest to God, I think somebody's listening. It was a few nights ago that Kate out on the front range suggested that the women of this country go and revisit the famous ancient Greek comedy Lysistrata, in which a central plot device is that until war is ended, women declare that they will no longer have sex with the men. Well, guess what? As a result of the behavior of the House, the Republican leadership of the Michigan House of Representatives said that the use of vagina violated the House's decorum, and that Representative Brown will no longer be called upon in future debates because she said vagina. I know, I've got the wrong accent, but as we discussed last night with Vince, I can't do that Michigan accent. One of my teachers in high school came straight to our little Alabama high school from Michigan State University, and we didn't think we'd ever heard anybody talk so funny. You know, us rednecks. But even with 4 years with her, never made it work. Couldn't get the accent down. But no. Representative Brown may keep kosher all she wishes, and she may be, and she may observe Jewish law. Next thing you know, we'll have to be listening to the Muslims in here telling us what their Sharia law tells them to do. But she will not be called upon in future debates. The first woman, during the calling of the amendment, another woman stood at the podium raising her hand. She wasn't even saying vagina. And was ignored by the men folks. State Representative Barb Byram confirmed as well that she's been banned from speaking in recognized debate because of her outburst. What was her outburst? Apparently it's a problem with the letter V. Because she used the word vasectomy. She had an amendment that would have subjected men to the same sort of regulatory control for their reproductive organs as women. Now, there were six mugwump Democrats who joined with the Repiglicans, voting Wednesday by 70-39 to push these anti-woman bills forward and out of the House and propel them, I guess, over to the Senate. And that's where we come to Kate's previous comment. And maybe it turns out that it's Michigan State Representative Rashida Tlaib who's listening, in which case, hey, Rashida, good work. She's from Detroit, and she called on the women of Michigan to withhold sex from their partners until the Repiglicans recall this hateful, misogynistic pile of dung that they think is protecting the life of the unborn fetuses. Representative Tlaib said, "We're launching a war on women. Stop having sex with us, gentlemen, and I ask women to boycott men until they stop moving this through the House." And why not? You know, you want something you can control, get something you can blow up, guys. Just as has been previously noted on the program, don't bite them in the neck or they're liable to fly out the window. So, I come back to a previous query. Where is it safe in this country? Where is there a state that the Republican Party is not trying to control someone's life under the guise of getting government off our backs? The question is particularly salient to women. Where are you safe in this country? Where can you attend to the needs of your reproductive system without some god-awful, hateful, misogynistic man trying to meddle in your medical decisions? The one woman who spoke was right. They don't need the advice of Michigan Right to Life. They need the advice of doctors. But then again, that's science.
And we don't, and as we know from North Carolina and Virginia, we don't want no science. Won't be using no science to measure sea level rise, and we won't even use the word sea level rise because that's liberal code. Oh, don't blame me for that one, Marty. Don't bite them on the neck or they'll fly out the window. That's strictly Jim. But for the life of me, well, no, what is it? I don't have the experiential background to speak to this. Because insofar as I am shining and glowy, or glowing and shiny, with white privilege, and not just white privilege, white male privilege, I can't in any wise tell you what it's like to walk around knowing that wherever I am, there is some right-wing Republican out there who is fascinated with my genitals and the workings thereof. Representative Thomas had it right. They are fascinated with her genitals and with the genitals of all women. I don't know if it's hatred or jealousy or some admixture of the two, but the fascination is very much real. And so if you want to talk about that, I mean, you know, there was a bit of a cultural dust-up a while back over something that happens in families of color called the talk. A speech commonly delivered to young African-American black males about what they can expect from American white privilege society. Is there a version of that for women as well? Where mother or grandmother sits down with daughter and says, "Sweetheart, you're beautiful, and you're bright, and you're intelligent, and you're as American as anybody, but there are some things you have to understand about white male-dominated American culture. There are things that are just going to happen to you in the course of your life. If, as we hope, you will live a long, healthy, and fruitful life, you will, along the way through it, have to deal periodically with the weird fascination, the mixture of hate and jealousy or whatever that attends repiglickens who never learn to mind their own business. And we'll see you as nothing but a baby-making machine who is, by definition, unequal to white males. Does that talk happen too? I can't help thinking that it does. If it doesn't, it probably should. Because there's some necessary reality in that. Now that bill in question, the Michigan anti-abortion bill, it has been rightfully referred to as the nation's worst. Worse than anything Mississippi did. You know, the sad thing is, I never wanted to append the word Stan to the name of Michigan. But with this, guess what? You kind of have to, don't you? We have to let Michigan take its place beside Mississippi Stan and Alabama Stan, so that now it's Michiganistan. The Speaker of the Michigan House, who made the decision to declare that Representatives Byram and Thomas Byram and Brown, Lisa Brown. Yeah, Jace, J-A-S-E. Maybe it's pronounced Jafe, I don't know. Jace Bolger, or is it Bolger? I don't know. Was the one who made the decision to silence the women. To declare that the representatives for literally thousands of Michiganders would no longer be allowed to speak. He didn't take away Representative Byram and Brown's right to speak. He took away the right of their constituents to be heard in that representative body. Fascism much? Representative Speaker Bolger? Jace? When the little women learn to maintain the decorum of the House, because after all, the decorum of the House is far more important than any dignity we would afford, well, you know, them, well, then maybe we'll allow them to talk some more. But this Michiganistan bill really is a piece of crap. Odd that it comes on the same day as Fox attack blonde Gretchen Carlson up and walked off the set while Brian Kilmeade was talking about women are everywhere, we're letting them play golf and tennis now, it's out of control. Over at Radio Rwanda, Gretchen got up and walked off telling Kilmeade, you read the headlines.
And it got better.
Good answer, Mike. All right. Headline time.
Women are everywhere. We're letting them play golf and tennis now. It's out of control.
You know what?
What, Gretchen? Tell us.
You know what?
She's out.
You read the headlines. Since men are so great. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Take them away.
All right, finally.
Take them away.
Okay. Moving an all-male crew.
In all your glory. Go for it.
In all my glory. Now your headlines. She needed a shower.
You know, those women, they get so emotional sometimes. She needed a shower. She didn't look particularly shower-needing. But no, just a simple reminder about the Michigan anti-reproductive rights bill. There's stuff out there that makes very clear what is wrong with it. Among other things, get this: in Michiganistan, it becomes a crime for anybody to coerce a woman into having an abortion so that doctors will have to give them a questionnaire saying, has anybody told you you've got to have this here abortion? So the doctor has to become a detective. HB 5711, which you heard under debate, also requires doctors to carry a $1 million liability insurance policy if they perform five or more abortions every month, or if they've had more than two civil suits in the past 7 years. That's an additional, in addition to any other medical malpractice insurance they carry. And yet, oddly enough, this is the Republican Party who don't like that medical malpractice. Tassel loafered wearing trial lawyers out there getting all rich when people win what Dim Leader once referred to as life's lottery by being butchered by a negligent physician. And once again, the 20-week mark is in the Michiganistan bill. No abortions, even for rape and incest victims, after 20 weeks. I guess that... well, it's too much. It's too much. But that is where that's where we find ourselves beginning this Thorn in the Side Thursday. There's more. Oh, there's more. And we will get to it in the next 2 hours of the program. We will also get to your phone calls. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. We have also recently added, in addition to that number and the direct dial number 304-658-3333, we've added Skype. And we've had a couple of Skype calls in the last couple of nights, and they've sounded pretty darn good. So you are welcome to also look for the Skype handle Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, and you can reach the program that way at no cost to nobody except for whatever we're all paying for our interweb tubes. It's not a big truck. Email comes in, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Have you been to the chat room lately? Head on radionetwork.com chat room. It's free, it's easy, and you should give it a try. All that having been said, we'll take a little break. It is Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday. That means we have a report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. The Green News Report is on the way, as are, I hope, your calls. Light it up now. It's much easier to get conversation in instead of hustling toward the finish line at the very end of the end of the program. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
You made up to love me. The broken dreams have got to
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, June 14, 2012.
It doesn't seem to me that they need $24 billion of our collective money as taxpayers when they'll make $1 trillion in profits over the next decade.
Big oil still fighting to keep its billion-dollar taxpayer subsidies. OPEC fights to raise oil prices. Americans for Prosperity fights back against extremist environmental kite-flying schoolchildren. Plus, remember this?
Gas prices, they are spiking. It will only get worse as we head towards summer.
$4 a gallon.
$5 a gallon.
$6 a gallon.
$7 a gallon.
$8 a gallon.
But you got to be tuned into the right channel to hear those forecasts.
Hey, Fox News, what do you say now that gas prices have fallen?
Yep, that's what we thought. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have been able to almost double our investment in clean energy.
Doubling down on green energy now, good campaign platform, or does it sound a bit desperate? We report, and you can decide.
Wonder which one Fox News viewers will decide. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, before we get to the Green News, some business here. We want to welcome aboard our newest affiliate, Mike Check Radio with Adam Hebert. You can listen to Adam on Saturday nights over at Ustream.tv. Glad to have you on board, Adam.
Yes, thanks, Adam.
Now, I read an amusing article this morning, Des, from ClimateRealityProject.org. The fossil fuel companies apparently are concerned that global warming and climate change is going to hurt their bottom line. For example, the Trans-Alaska pipeline is beginning to sink into the melting permafrost earlier than expected. All kinds of examples where the oil industry is now concerned about having to pay a price for what they are doing to the planet.
It's really amazing, isn't it?
Does the irony never stop? What do you have for us today?
Well, we do have an oily report today, but first, Friday is Global Wind Day, and school children in New Jersey and around the world will be holding kite-flying rallies to celebrate wind energy as a source of clean energy. But don't worry, Americans for Prosperity is on it, and they are planning to protest these subversive, radical, extremist kids' attempt to poison America's pure, sweet relationship with oil. I am not kidding. The right-wing Tea Party front group Americans for Prosperity, who are bankrolled by the billionaire Koch brothers, are sending 6 buses of protesters to a kids' kite rally in New Jersey on Friday. They're, quote, going toe-to-toe with environmental extremists to combat their radical agenda.
Ha! That'll show those pesky kids.
It sure will. In more advanced wing nuttery, remember just a few months ago when Fox News and right-wingers were blasting President Obama for high gas prices and predicting they'd skyrocket by summer?
Just how high could those gas prices go? Try $5 a gallon for starters.
By the end of summer, maybe 6.
And maybe 7.
How does $8 a gallon sound?
Surprise, surprise. Gas prices have now fallen to around $3.60 nationally due to ongoing global economic weakness. But the right wing is now remarkably silent now that the price of gas has dropped.
Go figure. We should also point out that the all-time high for gas occurred under George W. Bush in July of 2008, something that Fox News keeps forgetting to report.
But gas prices may be headed back up soon. At the regularly scheduled meeting of OPEC over the next few days, they will be discussing the drop in oil profits. It's of great concern, and they will decide on whether they will cut back production to push those prices back up.
And that will be
Barack Obama's fault as well if they do.
Big oil in the U.S. is fighting to keep its billions in taxpayer subsidies, although the rapid run-up in gas prices earlier this year pushed big oil's profits to near record highs. Oil industry representatives were very clear at a Senate Finance Committee hearing this week that they would simply cut drilling if they don't get their incentives. Here's oil man Harold Hamm of Continental Resources in response to a question from Senator Kent Conrad of North Dakota.
You've testified here that if that were taken away, in your company alone, you believe there would be a one-third reduction in drilling. Is that what your people have concluded?
It is. I'm not a tax accountant. You know, I'm an oil founder. But that in our company, it eliminates about 34-35% of our drilling activity.
Well, New Jersey Senator and Democrat Bob Menendez wasn't buying it.
The reality is the marketplace has dictated that they will make more than enough money to continue to pursue their exploration, whether here or abroad. It doesn't seem to me that they need $24 billion of our collective money as taxpayers when they'll make $1 trillion in profits, not proceeds, over the next decade.
And it should be noted that Harold Hamm has donated millions to a Mitt Romney super PAC while also acting as an official Romney campaign energy advisor.
Since when did the music man go into the oil business?
Oh, no, that's oil man Harold Hamm, not music man Harold Hill.
He's just a bang, beat, bell, ringing, big call, great gun, necker, nub, and rip, roaring every time a bullseye sails. But that's Professor Harold Hill, Harold Hill.
Oh, my mistake. Different guy, different industry, similar scam. For much more on that scam and all of the others that we didn't get to today in our Green News Report, please check out greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you to help us keep telling the truth over your public airwaves. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game was a 15-numbered balls. It's a devil's tool. Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble.
We're the team. Gotta rhyme it with P. And that stands for pool.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Approaching 17 minutes past the hour.
Did I hear that right?
I do a lot of reading through any given day. I missed the one about the teabaggers attacking the children flying kites. And I would have been okay with continuing not to know that. I mean, we have to know what these evil freaks are up to. But really? Now, we understand that the teabaggers have been a self-parodying organization all along. But they're going to pay to send 6 busloads of people to go toe-to-toe with children flying kites? Quest, Edith. Sometimes I just want to scream, I can't stand it, and go running out the door. So earlier, the Michigan legislature reduced itself to a scene from Monty Python's Life of Brian, and now we find that the teabaggers have reduced themselves to an episode from Seinfeld. You remember the episode, I'm sure. The one where Kramer was working on his black belt in karate, and it turned out that he was progressing so rapidly because he was kicking the butts of 10-year-old little boys and girls in karate class. Until the little boys and little girls finally ganged up on him and whipped his butt. Yeah, the teabaggers can't exactly go toe-to-toe with people who have brains. Or at least adult brains.
So they're going to try, because they failed miserably most, debate-wise, sorry. So they're going to lower their expectations a little bit and try to increase their chances by harassing children for flying kites. Now, we know we have little repig-licking lurkers out there. Is this your repig-licking party? Aren't you proud? Some of your fellow repig-licking teabaggers are going to go and harass children for flying kites tomorrow. Damn. I mean, if that don't make you feel all patriotic, I don't know what does. I'm going to have to stand up and sing. I'm sure they'll be listening to this on the way down to take on the kite flyers.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life.
Including my kites.
And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today.
Yep.
'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
Oh, wait a minute. That flag blows in the wind, Lee Greenwood. That communist wind that those little liberals are gonna fly kites in and destroy your freedom, and you won't be glad to be you're an American where you at least you know you're free, Lee Greenwood. There's a Lee Greenwood thing, Betsy? Oh, I'm gonna regret learning about this one too. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm sorry. All right. Oh, how did I miss that? Okay. Let me go find that. I got wrapped up in doing some writing last night. May not have seen it roll in. There's a Lee Greenwood thing. Oh, I can't find it. Send it again. I got to know this now. We're going to put everything on hold till I find out. Thank you. The Lee Greenwood thing. Oh no. Every now and then that song rears its ugly head and. Yeah. I'm just asking. If you had some free time and you were in New Jersey or around New Jersey, that's where it was going to be, right? New Jersey? Would you go and fly kites with the kids? Or would you go with your little tri-cornered helmet and your muzzle-loading shoot-'em-up gun and scream at the children for flying the kites? This is one of those little easy personality tests. There it is. Thank you, Betsy. Oh, yeah, I did see this. Yeah, that's what happens when one of them anti-colonialist Muslim Kenyans with a deep-seated hatred of white people is in the White House. What will we tell the children? Yeah, there's a principal in New York who won't allow a little precious kindergartner to sing God Bless the USA. The blog post says, liberals like her literally make my blood boil. It irks me to no end No one will be offended by that song unless they are an enemy of the country. And if so, too freaking bad on them. Well, some people are offended by the song, and they don't have to be an enemy of the United States. They just have to be a proponent of good music. Lee Greenwood put it best when he said that he would tell this principal that there is a difference between worshiping and respecting, paying tribute. No one is asking that she worship the flag just to respect it and what it stands for. Which, incidentally, ironically, is the Constitution of the United States. Which guarantees freedom of religion. Which guarantees that you don't have to, among other things, and the Constitution has been, the constitutionality of this has been ruled upon, stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance. You don't gotta. You don't have to take oaths on the Bible. And no, there is no difference between worshiping and respecting, paying tribute. If you are respecting and paying tribute to God, that is the very definition of worshiping God. And they are the same thing. Yeah, thanks for the reminder, Betsy. Well, coming to a legislature near you, a Republican mandate that we all stand when Lee Greenwood's awful little trite, hackneyed, miserable, shitty song is played. I mean, it couldn't be any more trite if it was rhyming moon, spoon, and June. Honestly. This in from Kate on the Front Range. Subject line, a little throw up in the back of my throat. I just popped in to log in and say I'm not here tonight. I'll catch the show on archives in the morning. Have been giving some thought to what you're talking about. I hope the rest of the show is better than Mr. Greenwood's pap, grin, with boiling blood. Jim gets it. Go fly a kite. What the hell are these idiots about? The real wind comes from their hot air from every orifice. Oh, I know, they'll get there and all them little right-wing teabaggers will get there and start teabagging and blowharding, and the next thing you know, the kites will be flying further and farther and faster and higher, and, Mommy, I'm out of string! By the way, I just got a note, from Ben over at White Rose. The podcast, for those of you who want to download it later, the podcast might be a little bit late going up because I'm going to have to send the file to Ben. He tells me he had a, and this is a horrifying phrase, had a software meltdown. Yeah. At any rate, lines are open. Light them up if you want to. We're going to go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
How are you, Kevin?
Good, doing good. Hold on just a second, though. I want to pass on a few words to the Michigan State Senate.
Oh, okay.
Vagina, vagina, vagina.
Yes.
And so there you are. I violated the decorum of the Senate and apparently said a very dirty word about someone's anatomy.
You know what?
I don't know about people anymore.
You know what needs to happen, and it would kind of have to happen on the fly, but some female member of the Michigan House of Representatives needs to have her last name changed to Vagina. Or better yet, if there is a progressive male member of the Michiganistan House of Representatives, he needs to have his last name changed legally in a court process to Vagina, so that every time he's called upon, the Speaker of the House, what's his name, Jafe Bolger, will have to say, the chair recognizes Mr. Vagina. Isn't that perfect?
That would be interesting. Although, with the way that chair works, he probably would come up with a reason for not recognizing the man because he's violating decorum in the House.
Oh, but see, we could put in the courthouse pleadings that the man was changing his name because God told him to.
Yeah, that might work.
And so, by not recognizing him, Jafe Bolger would be then violating his religious liberty by refusing to call him Mr. Vagina.
That is a thought.
Oh, it's like this all the time, Kevin. The wheels just turn and turn and turn. They're a little rusty sometimes, and every now and then we throw a sprong off the sprocket, but no, they just turn and turn. The smoke comes out, and that would just be brilliant, wouldn't it?
It would work for me. I personally think all the female representatives ought to go up there and use the word in every one of their speeches. And as far as him not recognizing that one woman, I would imagine she has some sort of court case available to her because he won't recognize her. Discrimination would be the start.
I honestly don't know the answer to that, Kevin, because each one of those bodies operates on an entirely separate set of rules, and the court would probably, I'm guessing, rule that the body has the right to maintain order in the means it sees fit.
Except for the fact he's refusing to recognize her because she used that word. And I could see, you know, in the right wing world where you might censure someone for that, but to refuse to ever recognize them again is a bit extreme. And I think you would have grounds to say that is discrimination based on a person. Again, you could go back to that religious liberty thing, you know. Her religious liberty is being violated because she believes in abortion, and therefore, that's a religious belief. She could state that, you know, just like that Jewish woman you had on. I think maybe it was the same one, but the one that's
Miss Brown.
Yeah, I back in my more religious days, I was listening to a Christian talk show, and a guy called in and quoted from the Bible, and it plainly shows where the woman's life is more valuable than a fetus. And, you know, of course Christians pick and choose anyway, which is bad enough, but at least if you're going to pick and choose and say you believe in the Bible, then what that young man quoted should be listened to, don't you think? Of course, they don't want to recognize the old Jewish laws of kosher because, oh, that's over with now. We don't have to recognize them. And that's where it goes. You get into this, you know, picking and choosing and everything else. And I've come to believe that religion is the drug of the people, and that's why these people are so successful in doing what they're doing, because it is a drug to people, plain and simple, you know?
Yeah, I think it goes past that. You know, it was Marx, was it, who said that religion is the opiate of the masses?
Yep.
It goes far beyond that, though, because, you know, an opiate, you just sort of lay around and stare at your shoes kind of quietly and dream weird dreams. But what religion does to people is to empower them to think that their prejudices and their bigotries are the perfected declaration of the Almighty. And that is much more dangerous than any opiate. I guess it's the different, you know, Marx said religion is the opiate of the masses. I say religion is the angel dust of the masses, because it makes them crazy and go chew people's faces off. I mean, you're aware of that story, right, Kevin? It turns out that one of the zombies who was attacking people was religiously insane.
I actually didn't. I've been busy with things here in the Springs the last couple days.
Yeah, his potential fiance, girlfriend, whatever, said there were never any signs that he was anything like that. He was a perfect churchgoer or whatever. And for me, that just, you know, that statement does not set up a dichotomy. It is in fact complementary, because when you buy into that kind of thing, and suddenly the voice in your head declares that it is God, and it's time for you to go and chew somebody's face off. Well, if it's God saying it, you're more likely to do it, aren't you?
Yeah, you see that all the time with paranoid schizophrenics. Either God, a dog. What was Berkowitz up in New York?
Yeah, dog.
That was what his. But the dog was speaking for God, you know. And so, and now Berkowitz says he's a born again Christian, and therefore he's.
Of course he is.
Role. Yeah. And but you don't see Jim Dobson using him like he did Ted Bundy, if you remember that.
No.
So,
yeah.
I have my own personal faith, belief, or lack thereof, but at the same time, I don't try to force that on people. And that's probably the biggest difference between those of us who are progressive and the right-wing extremist, because you can do anything, like you said. All you have to say is, God told me to do it, and, you know, you're fine. And,
that applies directly to, for instance, that constitutional amendment that was rejected Tuesday in North Dakota. If you said it was a function of your religious liberty, no matter what it was, then you had to get a pass.
Yep.
You know, including stoplights and traffic, other traffic signals, and who knows what else. Of course, yep. This is on the heels of legislation that was attempted some years back that mandated that children would have to be given passing grades even if they got the questions wrong, as long as they said that they were inspired to answer the question the way they did by Jeebus. You know, 2 and 2 is 5. I'm sorry, Johnny, you're wrong. No, I'm not. Jeebus said it's 5.
Yep. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I know we just have to keep fighting. I wanted to mention to you, they are talking. They didn't do a vote on it this Tuesday. They're doing it 2 weeks from now on fracking within the city limits of Colorado Springs. And obviously I'm against that, but I just find it incredible. We're in the middle of a drought. We just had another wildfire about 30 miles west of here.
Right, by all means, the whatever scarce water is left, let's use it. Let's use it drilling.
Yeah, and
I'm just checking now. You're in Colorado Springs, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you have this thing there called wind, Kevin?
Yep.
Does the sun ever shine on Colorado Springs?
More often than not.
And generally speaking, Colorado?
More often than not.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I wasn't absolutely certain, but I thought so. And consequently, couldn't Colorado put up a whole bunch of, I mean, couldn't you put up a whole bunch of wind turbines and solar panels in Colorado and pretty much take care of Colorado's energy needs?
that is being attempted, but obviously not enough because we've got a drill. You know, it's the drill, baby, drill thing. I talked to someone last night who thought it was perfectly fine to drill where they're talking about drilling because they use clean water to drill. And I was to the point that I didn't even bother to respond to this guy because he was so unknowledgeable of what fracking does and how much poison it puts into the water and how much water it uses. I mean, we're in the middle of a drought, but yet, let's bring these people in here to drill and take what water we've got and contaminate it and then put that back into the streams and rivers and water and rain and everything else. And, you know, I just find it sad. I don't know how the council's going to vote, but I want to be there on the 26th when they take that vote because I'm definitely against it. It doesn't affect me right now where they're drilling, but who's to say that the water table, how the water flows, might not flow directly into the reservoirs that I get my water from.
Yeah, it does directly affect you. It does.
Yeah.
It directly affects everybody in Colorado who uses water.
Yep.
See, that's the one thing. That's there's this hierarchy of human needs. Maslow defined them as food, shelter, you know, that kind of stuff. But if you break it down a little further, what is it? A human being can go 30, 40 days without food, right?
Yep.
We can go a couple or 3 days without water.
Yep.
We die in about 3 minutes without air.
Yep.
And so water and air are the two things that are most likely to be fouled by the hydrocarbon industry, even outside of any discussion of climate change.
Yep.
And with that in mind, one would think we would prioritize the cleanness of both of them, and yet through organizations like the American Petroleum Institute or the Petroleum Institute of America or Americans for Oily Greasiness or whatever it is,
yep,
they actually advocate to poison the two things without which humans die fastest, water and air, in reverse order.
And with those people that live by there, I would be up and on, you know. I'm one of those type of people, just like those Native Americans up there, I forget where it was, but in Minnesota, I think, where they were protesting those trucks coming through their territory, and that's the way I'd be if I lived right down there by that where they're talking about fracking. I'd just stand in the road. You know, now they may run over me, but you got to take a stand sometime. That's the thing I am most concerned about is people, a lot of people just aren't willing to take those stands anymore, you know. And Tuesday, we did a protest about our transportation. They were wanting to cut the express bus between Denver and Colorado Springs. And there were five people out there protesting. And that service is a choice service that people pay $22 a day for, and it's very popular. But there were five people out there protesting it. There were a lot of speakers, but five people actually protesting with fines. And that's what most concerns me, because people are going to lose their jobs if they get this service. You know, and the money that comes back into Colorado Springs.
But Kevin, if you can get rid of the service, that'll be one more little bit of communism that's gone from America.
Exactly, yes. And that's for our major.
And the free market will find a solution, because the free market, the invisible hand of the free market solves all problems.
Exactly, yeah. It solves all problems as long as the 1% get theirs and the 99%
get theirs
the
too.
Right, but what we're talking about with get theirs is totally different.
Yeah, it is an entirely different definition. You're absolutely right.
Exactly.
Well, Kevin, it's awful good to hear from you. Thanks for getting out and being active and taking part in your civic process. I know it's a bigger challenge for you than for possibly some other folks, but you do it anyway, and it is much appreciated.
Well, thank you, Bob, and definitely I'm glad I can sit and listen to your show today without coming in late for it. So I appreciate what you do as well.
Thank you very kindly, Kevin. You have a good evening.
You too, Bob.
All right. Bye now. Kevin, calling from Colorado Springs, and bear in mind, if you ever are tempted to say, well, that may not directly affect me, if you sit and think about it for a little bit, you'll find that it does. It really does. The number, of course, is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, direct dial 304-658-3333, and, of course, Skype available now to the handle Bob Kincaid Horn on your Skype account. Bob Kincaid Horn. It's that easy. I got a story, and I agree, I got a story from Fritz in Arkansas earlier today, and I have to agree that this is not necessarily, this has More and Monday written all over it, but I can't hold it for that long. Fritz merely sent me this story with the comment, I really should stay away from the internet on my days off. Yeah. The story is making its way around the state of Arkansas right now to either approbation or the whatever the opposite of that is. The Ozark Teabaggers rallied on June the 9th in Mountain Home, Arkansas. One of the speakers was Inga Marler, or, and I mean no disrespect, it may in Arkansas be pronounced Inge, I-N-G-E. Inga, or Inge Marler, is a Teabagger board member. And she gave some sort of an opening address. And you know how it is when you're talking to a crowd like that. You want to get them warmed up to you. You know, the things they teach you at Dale Carnegie about after dinner speaking and stuff. You want to give them a little chuckle and put a smile on their face before you begin really giving them the message. You want to give them an icebreaker joke. Now, being a teabagger, you can just imagine what the icebreaker joke was. Well, don't guess. I've got it here for you. Inga, or Inge Marler, steps up to the podium. And in order to get the teabaggers warmed up to her, offered the following. Strap in.
Can you hear me okay?
Wow.
Okay, understand this is going to be, you know, in dialect.
Okay. The new definition of democracy. A black kid asked his mom, Mama, what's a democracy? Well, son, she says, that be when white folks work every day so us poor folks can get all our benefits. But, Mama, don't the white folk get mad about that? She says, they sure do, son, they sure do, and that's called racism.
Oh, clap! Clap, you goddamn dumb little teabaggers! Yeah, ho, 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 I don't care who you are, that's funny. Yeah.
Fritz went on to note that the population of the county where that joke was told is 0.2% of color. Did you notice? And that, did you notice the dialect? I don't know why she didn't just go all the way. I mean, the teabaggers wouldn't have cared. They probably would have approved. Why didn't she just go all the way and do it in blackface? There were 500 people there for that Baxter County, Arkansas teabagging rally. And you heard how they just laughed. Don't that make the white folks mad? Well, yes, it does, and we call that racism. Jesus Christ. Arkansas Stan. You know, I halfway wish I hadn't long ago deleted that that soundbite from Tony Snow declaring that racism is over in America. I guess nobody ever got around to telling Inge Marler that there are by far more white folks on welfare than persons of color. In the audience there of those clapping, laughing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks was Senator Missy Irvin, who is a Republican there in Arkansas. She tweeted about the event while she was sitting in her little teabagging chair. She said, "Great rally this afternoon for the Ozark Tea Party in Baxter County. Great job at Richard Castor." Richard Castor was the person who had invited Inge Marler to speak. Because that Inge Marler, she's a pistol. She'll say anything. She don't care what anybody thinks. A black kid asks his mom, in case you had a hard time hearing the audio. A black kid asks his mom, "Mama, what's a democracy?" "Well, son, that be when white folks work every day so us po' folks can get all our benefits." "But, Mama, don't the white folk get mad about that?" "They show do, son. They show do. And that's called racism." Shall we explore the underpinnings of why a teabagger would find that funny? Because, you see, a teabagger thinks that paying taxes are the same thing as being lynched. That is how divorced from reality your average teabagger is. Because racism isn't really something. Racism isn't really the pernicious devil that stalks to this day our society. It's not really. It's just a matter of white people getting mad because the colored folk are getting their benefits. And so if somebody happens to get dragged behind a truck for a while till they're dead or hanged from a tree or their house burned down or shot, or that's just because the white folks are tired of paying for those people's benefits. Jesus, what a disgusting pile of excrement Inge or Inga Marler is. Naturally, she did catch some heat, and she apologized.
Mm-hmm.
When she was finally called on her nasty little bit of filth, she said, "Well, I'm sorry I told the joke. I just found it on the internet."
You know what? There's another very famous joke that's out on the internet. Maybe she could try that one with the teabaggers next time. It's called The Aristocrats. I'm sure the teabaggers would just laugh. Don't look it up. Not if you've just eaten. It's deliberately disgusting. But this comes on the heels of something else, and you know, it's one of those West Virginia moments that I'm not particularly proud of. It turns out that my state may be the most racist state in the Union. Not Mississippi Stan. Not Alabama Stan. Not Michigan Stan. But Appalachia Stan. And it's sad. Jesus, it's sad. Seth Stevens Davidowitz did some Google analyzing. In what I think is a fairly novel piece of work, Seth compared Americans' Google searches with their voting patterns. He concluded in a blog post at the New York Times, he said, "If my results are correct, racial animus cost Mr. Obama many more votes than we may have realized." He writes, "Barack Obama won 52.9% of the popular vote in 2008 and 365 electoral votes, 95 more than he needed. Many naturally concluded that prejudice was not a major factor against a black presidential candidate in modern America." Again, Seth Stevens Davidowitz says, hold up. He begins by explaining the problems of trying to analyze racism in data. Because even the racists, unless you're just a beer-swilling skinhead laying drunk at some monument somewhere, you're generally, you know, wearing your little 88 t-shirt. You're not going to say, "Well, hell yeah, I'm a racist." I mean, there's just not a whole lot of those people. There's enough, more than enough. They're there. And Lord knows they vote Republican. But there aren't as many of them as the folks who just are and don't want to admit it. Seth used a new tool he describes as called Google Insights. And it tells researchers how often words are searched in different parts of the United States. He says, of course, the results are not perfect, but the function works, as he describes it, remarkably well. Here's how it works. Google, aggregating information from billions of searches, has an uncanny ability to reveal meaningful social patterns. God is Googled more often in the Bible Belt, Lakers in Los Angeles. He continues, the conditions under which people use Google online and mostly likely alone, not participating in an official survey, are ideal for capturing what they are really thinking and feeling. You may have typed things into Google that you would hesitate to admit in polite company. I certainly have, he says. The majority of Americans have as well. We Google the word porn more often than the word weather. You see where this is going? He says many Americans use Google to find racially charged material. He describes the unpleasant task of ranking states and media markets in the United States based on the proportion of their Google searches, including the word, and I'm sorry, I don't like to use it, but it is the reality of what he was doing, including the word nigger. This word, he says, was included in roughly the same number of Google searches as terms like Lakers, Daily Show, Migraine, and Economist.
Really? Migraine? Economist? Lakers? Daily Show?
That is not to say that they were Googled conjunctively. That word was Googled conjunctively with those phrases, just as often as. Consider the pervasive impact of The Daily Show. How often must that be Googled? Or the number of people who suffer from migraines? Or in a floundering economy, the number of people who look up economist or economics? He says, a huge proportion of the searches I looked at were for jokes about African Americans. He says, I did not include searches that included the word nigga, N-I-G-G-A, because these searches were mostly for rap lyrics. Data came from 2004 to 2007. He says, because he wanted a measure not directly influenced by feelings toward Mr. Obama. He said, from 2008 onward, Obama becomes a prevalent term in racially charged searches. And then this, Bob's little oh-hell moment. The state with the highest racially charged search rate in the country was West Virginia. Before anybody starts feeling smug, the other areas with high percentages included Western Pennsylvania, Eastern Ohio, Upstate New York, and Southern Mississippi. So taking that data, Seth Stevens Davidowitz went to work. He said he tested whether Mr. Obama underperformed in those areas. He statistically predicted how many votes Mr. Obama should have received based on how many votes John Kerry received in 2004, plus the average gain achieved by other 2008 Democratic congressional candidates. The results, he says, were striking. The higher the racially charged search rate in an area, the worse Mr. Obama did. He offers up as a comparison Denver, Colorado, and Wheeling, West Virginia. Mr. Kerry received roughly 50% of the votes in both markets. He says, based on the large gains for Democrats in 2008, Mr. Obama should have received about 57% of votes in both Denver and Wheeling. Denver and Wheeling, though, exhibit different racial attitudes. Denver had the fourth lowest racially charged search rate in the country. Mr. Obama won 57% of the vote there, just as predicted. Wheeling had the seventh highest racially charged search rate in the country. Mr. Obama won less than 48% of the Wheeling vote. Adding up the totals throughout the country and racial animus cost Mr. Obama 3 to 5 percentage points of the popular vote. Racial prejudice, he concludes, gave John McCain the equivalent of a home state advantage nationally. Here's where it gets scary. Mr. Stevens Davidowitz says it is possible, if my findings are correct, that race could very well prove decisive against Mr. Obama in 2012. Most modern presidential elections are close. Losing even 2 percentage points lowers the probability of a candidate's winning the popular vote by a third, and prejudice could cost Mr. Obama crucial states like Ohio, Florida, and even, I don't know why he uses the word even, Pennsylvania, because I know what my good friend Rick Smith says. Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh on one end, Philly on the other, and Alabama in the middle. And it's true. So, sorry, Tony Snow, wherever it is that you're roasting in hell, whatever spit you're turning on. No, Tony Snow, racism is not over in America. And the fact of the matter is, it may just be getting into full swing. And yes, West Virginia is a profoundly racist state. I've gotten to where I cannot stand the sight of a couple of individuals in my own little town because of the number of times that I've walked into a convenience store to hear them telling those jokes. It is sickening. And it causes me no small amount of grief because I'll look at him and say, oh, you're a real laugh riot. Racism much? Well, I ain't no racist. Yeah. So, understand. When the teabaggers, the teabagger rally in Mountain Home, Arkansas was not atypical. It is how teabaggers are. Because they were nowhere to be found during the 8 long tormented years of the dim sun regime, in which all those financial things that they profess to be so heatedly, patriotically upset about were on full display and in fuller swing than anything that has happened since January 2009. They were nowhere to be found. You let a man with darker skin, however, declare that perhaps it would be a good idea not to let Detroit and the auto industry simply die. And the next thing you know, we're taking our country back. Where's my Lee Greenwood, damn it? Yeah. Yeah. Jim noting, yeah, that joke is as funny as ALS, my lord. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, I bet if you ask, none of those folks would admit to being a sheet-wearing, cross-burning, Negro-lynching racist. Well, no, they wouldn't admit it or nothing. That's half the fun of, being a racist, is getting to say you ain't one till you get caught a clapping as loud as you can clap by the microphone for a racist joke. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Just reacting to the joke that idiot told. You know,
you'd like to think that America is gone, but it's not, Jim. It's just not.
Let me tell you a story, okay?
Go right ahead.
Back in the 30s, well, it must have been 1932, 1933, Could have been 34, 35. That's my dad got out of the Citadel. He came home to Camden, South Carolina. And, you know, at this place, it was a tavern in Camden. And a bunch of his cronies were laughing about something they'd just done. And what they had done is they had taken a black boy named Flavon Giger. And they had cast him adrift in a boat in a pond, and they thought that was so funny. So my dad asked, you know, well, where did you leave him? Out in the pond, in the dark. My dad went out there, got the child, took him to his mother, and his mother said, Mr. Anderson, she said, I don't know what I can do. I really can't take care of him properly. My dad took him home. He was raised with my family. He saw that he went to school, went into the service, and later came out as a postmaster in Chicago.
I'll be damned. That's beautiful, Jim. Postmaster.
Yep, sure did. And he came to our family reunion.
Sure enough. Because he was family.
Absolutely. In the 30s, you know, at the height of the Bedsheet Brigade, you know, one would hope that, I don't know, through all the civil strife and stuff like that and the prejudices and other things that have continued through the decades, that some of that spirit would have survived. But it would appear to me as though its growth has been, you know, severely attenuated and diminished.
Yeah. Well, and it's on the thing that scares the dickens out of me is that, all right, so I tell the story that Fritz sent along about the woman in Arkansas, and maybe we can sort of reassure ourselves by saying, well, you know, that's just an isolated incident. But then, Jim, when you couple it next to the findings of this doctoral student who drilled down into, you know, Google searches are amazingly personal. And they do tell us things that we would rather not know about ourselves. Yeah, the Google Analytics, if I write something about coal mining in an email, Google will offer me an ad at the top about coal mining jobs. They can't predict everything perfectly, but when you're running around out there and in a state like ours where we live, Jim, West Virginia, when you correlate those search results with the fact that 23% of Democratic voters in the 2008 Democratic primary, in which Republicans were not allowed to vote, said that they voted for Hillary Clinton because they weren't ready for a Negro in the White House, you know that Mr. Stevens Davidowitz is pretty much on the right track, isn't he?
I guess so.
And it leaves open the question of how in God's name, with the understanding that you have offered from time to time that there are some things that only the grave can cure. Well, the grave has been curing a lot, you know, say between 1920 and now. But it isn't gone, and it isn't even fading.
Well, it's passed down from generation to generation. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, this is where we cue up the soundtrack to South Pacific, and you have to be carefully taught, right?
That's it. Very carefully taught of people whose skin is a different shade. It's sung by John Curtu. I think it was Bloody Mary or whomever who played what, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Juanita Hall or whomever in South Pacific. Yeah, you're right.
And that's what I really, honest to God, I can't get my mind around that notion that as you and I speak right now, there are households in this state where if you played that joke, they, like the attendees, would laugh, and if you told them that people had been offended by it, well, let's just see, that's what political correctness does.
Oh, Bob, I can remember when I first came here, and I went into a hardware store downtown. It's no longer in operation, but it was Martin Luther King Day. We had the day off, and I'd go down there, and I wished the proprietor Happy Martin Luther King Day and extended my hand. He wouldn't shake it. I'm not kidding.
I don't think you are. I would not gainsay you for an instant in that.
He thought I was just absolutely nuts. It looked at me like I was just...
Three heads.
...come on the earth. Yeah, it sure did. I mean, we'll forget that. I hadn't thought about that in a long, long time. But I just wanted to relay that story of my dad.
Well, I thank you for doing it. I really appreciate it, Jim, and I know the Horn family does, too.
Well, I hope they do, because it was something that, you know, I grew up with, and... It was just a different type of attitude.
And, you know, something...
And that's real, what I call Christianity.
Yeah. If you've done it unto the least of these, my brothers, you've done it also unto me. Right?
Absolutely. And I hope if my father looks down from heaven tonight that he has heard this broadcast.
You know, I do, too. I do too, because you've told us a few things about your father, and he must have been an incredibly special man, especially in his age, in his time, and in his geography.
Yeah, he was. He was a wild sort. As a matter of fact, I was told my mother told me that she was told not to even give him a date, because after he was out of school, he used to barnstorm. He used to fly planes and stuff like that. And go.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, yeah. He was a member of the OX-5, the original Aviators of America. It's called OX-5. You can look it up on the Internet. And I have his certificate for that hanging in my hallway.
Well, I can say, I mean, no offense, but I can see where a mother might advise her daughter not to... have anything to do with a barnstormer, because it tended to be a short career back then, didn't it?
I know it. In this fight, he was from a pretty good family. They said he was just too wild and had too many strange ideas. And I think it was probably not the barnstorming, but the ideas that he would express and stuff like that didn't exactly coincide with his fellow travelers or people like that. You know.
Well, Jim, you do well by your daddy, and I think that's all that any parent could ever ask.
I hope so, Bob. I hope so, Bob. I just wish he were still around so I could honor him more.
Lord, I know. I miss mine every day, and I've tried to explain to people some of the hurt goes away, but the lonesomeness never does.
That's true. That's very true. And you know, I just wanted to share that with you, and I thought that other people within the sound of my voice would appreciate it. But that young man was reared, and he got an education, and he went into service country and came out, got into the civil service, and became a very useful member of the community, and also would reattend all of our family reunions. He was family.
Beautiful. It almost... that could very easily be a screenplay, Jim. It truly could. And an inspiring one into the bargain.
I think you're right there. Well, listen, I know you have other people who are waiting on the line to get in for the hour closes, so you take care.
All right, have a good evening, Jim. Take care.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. The warm and wonderful things you find out when family sits down to chat. And that's us, the Horn family. A couple of lines open if you want to jump in. 14 minutes past the hour. Trust you know the number by now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob. Good afternoon.
Brother Albert, how are you?
You know, how are you going to do? You know, I don't know. Like, you know, talking about this racism nonsense. I'd like to think that overwhelming the majority of people aren't racist. I know I'd like to think that. But I think, you know, when we talk about the young people, yeah, there's still some. But the thing, I think the big problem is the other side, they're just so loud. They're, you know, they always, you know, their projections is that we're shrill and that we're, you know, whatever we are, everything they are, you know, everything that they project on us. They're the victims. Obama.
Yeah, they complain. They complain the most in the things they complain the most about in us are the things that they routinely manifest in themselves. Fairly put.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And it would be easy to say that, you know, they're just loud and they get more attention because of how loud and obstreperous they are. But when you, you know, with the caveat understanding that that there are lies, damned lies, and statistics, the Google data that the gentleman put forward kind of says that that on a gut level it is much more prevalent than anyone might have realized.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, also, you know, you got to watch with that Google, you know, data cuts both ways. You know, I mean, I myself have searched things that, you know, probably aren't very good, but I got to search them to get more information about them so I can, you know, dismantle them. You know, so, you know, I mean, who hasn't wound up a storm front? You know, I mean, you got to don the filth suit, the biohazard suit, and everything else,
and go wading into the swamp. I know. I remember the night on this program where I went wading off to a website about something called Prussian Blue to find some little blonde twins who were singing Nazi hate anthems. Children.
Mm-hmm.
And mommy and daddy were taking them around to various skinhead Aryan nations, Klan, Nazi rallies, and promoting their children, trying to hustle some money on their children's backs by getting their children to sing hate songs.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and if you haven't seen the documentary about those girls once they grew up, there is one out there. The name doesn't, you know, the name, but I'm sure a Google search, you know, just if, unless you don't want to be on the Google analysis there, you know, you're not going to be a racist, but you know, look for it, see it, see what kind of impact that's done. I mean, yeah, they're still in, you know, wherever, Idaho, you know, but they are, you know, kind of pushed out, you know, that kind of mindset really isn't, and I mean, I know I'm in a bubble, but that mindset doesn't really fly with anyone I really know, you know, you get it here and there, but you know, not.
Yeah, what's frightening though is that there, and I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, is that we all do have our bubbles. You know, I don't hang out with anybody who talks or thinks that way, but the fact of the matter is, like I said, all I've got to do is find out that we're out of cat food at 9:05 p.m. and drive down to the local Rippy Mart for a tin of little Friskies, and it's there for me any night of the week that I want to hear it. And there's a couple of giggling idiots who routinely talk about the President of the United States, not in terms of whether or not he is a good president,
mm-hmm.
or whether his policies are effective, but why he has to be gotten rid of because of the color of his skin.
Well, brother, I know the toxin's deep. You know, the toxin's deep, especially in some areas. You know, some areas are necrotic in terms of this fabric. You know, I hate to keep harping on David Attenborough, but my God, I wish people would start watching some more documentaries. It should be required. How do you not see these connections? And you know, you're going to sit there and cry about race? Fish don't. You know, it's just so ridiculous. Ridiculous. It's sad. It's disgusting. You know, it just is disgusting. I'm so sorry.
You know, you're gonna love this. It's certainly sidebar material and not directly on point. But Agnes sent me we live in the same house, we love each other, we've been married for 19 years, and I get emails and text messages from my wife. She sent me this story about a recently rediscovered pamphlet from the early 20th century Robert Falcon Scott expedition Terra Nova in search of the South Pole. Roald Amundsen eventually beat him to the South Pole. Scott, like a dummy, got himself all dead. But there was a natural a natural historian, they were called at the time, who was observing the wildlife and wrote a pamphlet, Albert, that was suppressed at the time about the shockingly pornographic behavior of penguins,
mm-hmm.
and how he caught them in the act of being engaging in homosexual behavior, and what really shocked him was the fact that he observed them in the act of necrophilic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And he used these phrases like perverted and unnatural and, you know, things that betray him as a man of his times.
Mm-hmm.
But there, you know, there it was. And the only reason I mention it is that that was an era when people put skirts on tables to keep the legs from showing because they were afraid it would arouse people into a sexual orgiastic frenzy. When in fact it was the repression that brought on the sexual orgiastic frenzy, right?
Yeah. Repression is nasty. Look at what it's doing to the Republicans.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I got an email earlier from liberal in South Carolina pointing out after I played Lee Greenwood that Mr. Greenwood is gay.
Mm.
He said, the liberal in South Carolina said, "You don't need to say it, but you can tell everybody that I said it, Lee Greenwood's gay." Now watch the conservative heads explode. He said, "I was in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee when Greenwood opened his theater there, and in Branson I used to buy most of our theater supplies from Greenwood's former technical director. The man is gay."
Mm-hmm.
And, but God, you know, so he is welcome to make comments saying that it's not worshiping the flag and it's not worshiping God, it's just honoring and tribute. He's welcome to do that as long as he himself remains repressed. As long as he stays in the closet where, in the views of the right wing, he damned well belongs. Because that contributes to that gone, never happened in the first place, leave it to Beaver world, where the Republicans think that somehow if they just click their ruby slippers enough, they will find their way back to.
Yeah, well, you know, but they keep, you know, they're just playing football this whole time. And you know that they're the ones with the problem with it. You know, I mean, who amongst us, I'm sure there was always idiots on our side. But still, I mean, you know, if you look at the numbers, who's gonna have it? You know, who has more members on that team? We all know. And they're the ones with the problem. And yeah, you're right. They're the ones that gotta suppress it. They can't even have governors, right? Is that governor whole thing? And it's only an issue because it's an issue with them. But we're the homophobes, and we're the racists, and yeah, we're the Marxists, and all the other things, you know, because you know they're going to block all the judges now. Now they're going to sit here and you know just keep the ball of no going while they say, "Oh, Obama's blaming it for spending trillions on the economy," and "Oh, look at this, a Kenyan usurper. Where's his birth certificate?"
You know, and then of course there's. We've played him on the program from time to time, Brian Fisher from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, who has recently declared that allowing gay people to adopt children is the very same thing as, you know, one-to-one equivalence, Brother Robert, is the very same thing as child sexual abuse.
You know, we should have let McCain win. We should have. We should have let it burn. You know, these are the reasons. They're like a mold and a mildew. It doesn't matter. You know, they're in the deep. They're in the grout. Just got to redo. We got to regrout it. It's ridiculous.
We got to regrout.
That's. I mean,
perfect.
What else can you say,
Toaster?
What else can you say? This is ridiculous. Oh, I mean. You know, it's Obama that deregulated the banks. Didn't you know that, you know? Because, I mean, we only collapsed in 2007.
Right, there was no 2001 recession.
No. No, there was no, you know, making McDonald's employees manufacturing sector jobs.
No, that never happened.
None of that. No, and there was none of that, you know, all that gerrymandering of the numbers. They didn't do that, and, you know, they didn't do any of that, and I can't imagine why they would imagine that all the deregulation that they didn't do, you know, caused, you know, all the damage the Democrats did. That's what it is, right?
I mean, yeah, but
you're a Republican.
Within the framework of your regrout theory, Albert, it is buried deep. And the problem is when it lays deep and it goes from dormant to active,
mm-hmm.
even if it's buried deep, it causes big problems. By analogy, there's a story out there today that in Oregon, a case of bubonic, or perhaps, I forget the other name for it, plague, freaking plague, is being reported. It's the fifth case in like 10 years or something. A guy was bitten by a rat that he was trying to save from a cat, and came down with the plague. You know, including the buboes.
Yeah.
The black pustulent things filled with dead bacteria and old white blood cells and blech.
Well, he's
critically ill. He's critically ill, but here's the kicker. Because of the fact that there aren't many cases of bubonic plague anymore, no one in the United States manufactures bubonic plague vaccine. So I guess they're treating him in the hospital and everything, but they're having, look somewhere else around the world to try to find some plague vaccine. And of course, now that
Botox. You know, I was going to, the politicians will be walking, hey, where everybody go? All the actresses, hey, Ivana Trump, all the other ones.
No, Jesus.
Where's Jeeves? I need a martini.
Lupe!
Oh, my God. Yeah, Lupe. That would be awesome. There, goddess of irony again. Strikes again.
Oh, she stays busy.
Yeah, well, there's so much to stay busy about. Look at it. I mean, it is downpour. It's ridiculous. It's cats and dogs out there. You know, I mean,
here we are in a country that is struggling economically, and to say struggling is a very mild word at this point. Well, I mean, the 1% aren't struggling. They're doing very nicely. Thank you very much, and please bring them another lobster, would you, Albert?
Are you
going to have a 1%? I got to ask you, are you going to have a 1% pizza?
No.
You need to put a 1% pizza on the menu with like lobster and Kobe beef and, you know,
yeah, it'd be like $80,000.
Yeah, and it's $80,000.
But see what happens if I get called on it, because you know that's just gonna, I must be the first, and then they're gonna come. I'm gonna be like,
Well, but see, that's the whole thing. It's the free market. That's the $80,000 is all markup.
Oh, they'll wait too.
Pardon me while I go fish up a lobster somewhere. You know, in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's the can opener.
But you know, here, yeah, it, right.
We'll put those Vienna sausages on there too, real fancy.
Yeah, yeah, with a little, yeah, wrap them in bacon.
Wrap them in bacon, call them pâté.
Right, pâté de cylindrique. But in the midst of all these problems we've got, guess who introduced a sex selective abortion ban in the Senate today?
It's like shooting monkeys in a barrel. You gotta get the red one. I mean, there's way too many to hit on the way in.
Thank you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
we'll get to watch Willard try to open.